This is Glow in the Dark Radio. The science fiction podcast with original independent science fiction written and performed by Mike Luoma, with music by Kevin MacLeod, The Vatican Assassin Trilogy, and The Adventures of Alibi Jones by Mike Luoma are available in ebook, trade paperback, and audiobook wherever you find your books online. Get links and details at glowinthedarkradio.com. This is the Science Fiction Podcast, Glow in the Dark Radio. I'm your host, your performer, your writer, Mike Luoma. On this episode, I'm going to be bringing you a previously never-before podcast short story, a standalone science fiction short story, and set early in Alibi Jones' career, so no previous listening or reading necessary to get into Alibi Jones' blind eye. It's one of some previously never-before podcast short stories, which are in Alibi Jones' Six Short Stories, redone in 2018. Now, the audiobook is available, but they have never appeared on this podcast. Versions not yet shared here. So this week it's Blind Eye. We heard the polished-up Father's Day last week, and the Alibi Jones in Over His Head rewrite will be on next week's episode. This week it's Blind Eye, as Alibi Jones, fresh from one of his first negotiations as a mediator, attends a state function for his Aunt Anita, the prime representative of the Solar Alliance at this time, on the planet Cat's Eye. And Alibi bumps into an old acquaintance who seems to be up to no good. Now, chronologically, this is one of Alibi's first adventures, as it takes place before the novel Alibi Jones. You can also read it in comic book form. It's one of the stories in The Adventures of Alibi Jones, issue number 1, from Glow in the Dark Radio Comics, with art by Mesha. It's also based on historical events, in a way. And I'll tell you that. More about that after the story. The story itself is a few years old. It was originally a comic book script written more than 11 years ago. The story first appeared as a comic book short story in Earthbound Comics' Spacebound, issue number 1, back in 2010. My first audio version was based on that script. Very closely adapted. I didn't really rewrite the script. I kind of used that as I was doing the audio and altered stuff on the fly, almost. So it was very closely adapted from the script, and that version originally appeared in the 2011 anthology Patio Racket Presents Glimpses. But I'll be honest, I've never been incredibly happy with that adaptation. So when I was putting out Alibi Jones' Six Short Stories in print for the first time, back in 2018, I decided to rewrite and completely readapt this story entirely. Fresh start. So it's built off the same comic book script, and a lot of the dialogue is the same, but there is a little more meat on this version's proverbial literary bones, you know? Well, you'll hear. It's more of a story. Before we get into the story, a little bit of book news. I've got publishing news of the non-science fiction kind. 4 new calendars coming out that you can get your hands on now. There's the pretty one, as I call it, The Views of Vermont, The Striking Beauty of the Champlain Valley. There's also Ancient Vermont Mysteries. Part of what I've been doing lately is seeking out possible Native American stonework, which not everybody believes exists. So that's why I call it Ancient Vermont Mysteries. Maybe these are things, maybe they are not, but I think they are, and I tell you what they are, and there's pictures and blurbs, That's the Ancient Vermont Mysteries calendar. There's also Ancient Stone Mysteries of New England, Stone Rows, and Stone Chambers. Because some of what people do accept or are starting to accept as Native American stonework are the Stone Rows and Stone Chambers. Other people have other theories, but a lot of people like to check out the Stone Rows and Stone Chambers, so they're featured exclusively in that one. I also have one, Exploring Ancient America, which is looking at places around the country, including New England, New York, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Indiana, Illinois, all over that kind of, I don't know, they reveal parts of history that we don't necessarily know about or that aren't talked about, that aren't taught in schools. So it's an ancient America that you may not be familiar with, which it's pretty fun to uncover. And I did a road trip this summer, so some of these are from that, and some of these are, again, from this area. It's all DIY. Photos, page design, production, doing the printing, print on demand through lulu.com. So if you want to check out the calendars, you can go to glowinthedarkradio.com/calendars. There's links there for galleries that show you all the pictures, and the galleries you can click through to get the calendar at Lulu. It is one of the least expensive ways I know of to physically share these pictures with people. You might like them, so. Again, that's glowinthedarkradio.com/calendars. Would love to have your support as a patron if you dig the podcast on a regular basis. I've got 3 levels at Patreon, so you can sign up there and help me keep this thing going. I've got folks who do. They are awesome. My very big, large thanks to my patrons. Thank you, thank you. But yes, at patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio, or go to glowinthedarkradio.com and click through to Patreon. There are 3 membership levels. There's $2 a month, $5 a month, and $10 a month. And it helps me keep the podcast going and the websites up and everything happening. And I do special things for patrons. You've got access to a special timeline nobody else has, along with a character web that goes into some great detail. And that's for patrons only, at the 2 highest levels. One of the many cool things that patrons get. And I'm thinking of doing a patrons only first draft podcast of the next Alibi Jones novel. I gotta tell you though, Alibi is telling me how the next book begins, so I need to do some rewriting. But he's right. It's better. It makes more sense. So damn characters really do come alive in your head, and sometimes they tell you how things are going to work. Okay. But I am. I'm still thinking about a first draft podcast for patrons. I've been living with this big story in my head for a while now, and it's finally kind of cohering in my brain. But damn, it is sort of sprawling. Now, the working title is The Mortimek Wars. Oh, I like it. It's big, like I say, but I think it's going to be good. And it picks up, you know, of course, where Starseeds of Earth left off. A little cliffhanger ending. I don't know. All right, one and done this time around. We've got Blind Eye on the way next on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Are you having trouble keeping up with the ebbs and flows of modern geekery? Is the real world holding you back from knowing what is happening in the geeky world? To answer these and other personal problems brought in by your friends, gaming group, and loved ones, Geek Radio Daily presents daily informational sessions brought to you by the wonderful Billy Flynn, the Flynnstress, and podcasting's Rich Siegfried. They contain such helpful segments as history, geek birthdays, box office results, the latest in DVD and Blu-ray, video game and comic releases. Why, they also have a weekly show hosted by the wonderful Billy Flynn and the Flynnstress, which includes interviews and commentary. And to make sure you are informed, Geek Radio Daily also provides you with your daily dose of geek news to make sure you know more than that jerk know-it-all Steve. Visit us at geekradiodaily.com. That's right, Geek Radio Daily. All the geek without the weight. Now available in fine Corinthian leather.
This is Alibi Jones, Blind Eye, on Glow in the Dark Radio.
Solar Alliance Cruiser B, you are cleared to break orbit.
Thank you, Her Control, Alibi says. This is Alibi Jones, Solar Alliance Mediation Corps Cruiser B. Out! Alibi Jones pilots his Solar Alliance cruiser, a smaller spacecraft, up and off of Her, the homeworld of the cat-like alien race, the Darkur. He sits on the bridge, surrounded by the glowing array of heads-up displays and controls of the cruiser, and feels a bit of a glow himself. Not bad. A successful mediation. He sets his navigation system to line him up on the nearest transspace jump point. The Flays rep even decided to stay on for some vacation time on Her. That's got to be a good sign. For the first time in days, Alibi allows himself a smile, even keeps it as he catches himself grinning like an idiot on the outgoing comm feed. Alibi Jones is a good-looking Asian-American kid in his mid-20s, with short black hair. He's about 5'10", in decent shape, and fills out his white and blue Solar Alliance uniform jumpsuit pretty well. Alibi has been on Her, working in his capacity as a mediator for the Solar Alliance Mediation Corps. He just finished his assignment, helping seal a trade agreement between the feline-appearing Darkur and the angular, bony aliens known as the Flays, not known for their transparency. The mediation did seem to be a success. The Darkur were able to come to a trade agreement with the Flays. The Darkur impressed me. I think we'll be able to get along with them. Just getting to know the cat people, really. Seem to distrust the Flays as much as we do. At the cruiser's controls, Alibi replays the scene in his mind's eye, looking on as a Flays and a Darkur touch alien claws to alien paws across the bargaining table. Only Faux Pas was mistaking the ambassador's brother for him. The Darkur don't all look alike, but those two had similar coloring. Kind of embarrassing. Well, now home to Cat's Eye for some R&R. The comm interrupts and changes his plans. Priority call from Dr. Anita Capituna, the comm says. Priority call. Anita Capituna, Alibi's Aunt Anita, appears on a screen in front of him on the ship's bridge. Anita is a tough, take-no-BS, older Latina woman in her early 60s, with a little black left in her mostly silver, shoulder-length hair. Aunt Anita, Alibi greets his aunt. I just finished with the Darkur and the Flays. So I hear, Anita says. Sounds like a solid trade agreement. Congratulations, Ali. Thanks, Alibi says. You're not calling just to congratulate me, though, are you? I can hear it in your voice. What's up? Well, I do want to congratulate you, Alibi. But I also have a favor to ask. Alibi smirks. I knew it, he says. He sighs. Don't sound so put out, Anita says. The favor is near your home on Cat's Eye, and it involves going to a party. Is that so bad? Alibi rolls his eyes. Depends on whose party. The governor's? Another diplomatic dinner? Alibi complains to his aunt over the comm. Thought you were through with this stuff. You're retired. Even the former prime representative of the Solar Alliance has obligations, Allie, Anita says. She smiles a reassuring smile at him. I know I can trust you to represent me well and with honor. Governor Villa will be pleased to see you again. Another thought strikes her. Oh, and be sure and wear your dress uniform. The ship alerts Alibi. His transspace jump point is approaching. Alibi engages the bridge controls and readies his ship for the transspace jump to Cat's Eye. "You know, Ananita," Alibi says, a playful tone in his voice, "I'm just about to make the transspace jump to Cat's Eye. The transspace engines might misfire. I could end up anywhere." She purses her lips to fight a smile as she answers, "That's fine, so long as you end up at the governor's residence on Cat's Eye by 8 o'clock tonight. Ananita out." The sprawling governor's estate on Cat's Eye is lit up at night, the luxurious residence bathed in soft pastel pinks and violets that complement the ambient light of the Cat's Eye Nebula, brilliantly dominating the starry night sky above. There is a party going on. It's a warm evening. Cat's Eye is a human colony world with a breathable atmosphere. Guests stroll about outside on the residence's grounds, as well as gather within spacious rooms in the main building, as the party continues. Alibi waits at the entrance to the main ballroom for Governor Villa's doorman to announce him, so he can officially enter the party. He checks the time. 8 o'clock? Right on time, Ananita.
Bearing the greetings of his esteemed aunt, former Prime Representative Ananita Capituna, Mr. Alibi Jones of the Solar Alliance Mediation Corps, the doorman bellows.
Alibi, in full dress uniform, makes his entrance into the main hall. He spots Governor Emilio Villa, waiting for him across the room. Villa, the young governor of the colony, is in his 30s, a man of Latino and Italian heritage. Alibi and Villa each nod at the other, and Alibi begins to make his way through the 50 or so gathered guests in the hall to pay his respects. Always in style in his Solar Alliance Interplanetary Force dress uniform, Alibi notes that fashion here on Cat's Eye seems to have taken a sort of neo-Victorian turn, a little steampunk. He politely winds his way through the aristocratic folk in their foppish finery. Many of the other guests are young, many younger than Alibi. The human population on Earth's colony worlds skews young, as evidenced here on Cat's Eye by the age of its governor.
"So glad you could come, Alibi," Villa says. "Your aunt has been a great benefactor to Cat's Eye."
"Thank you, Governor Villa," Alibi says. He smiles, nods, and the governor drifts off to greet other guests.
"I have made my official appearance. Good. Wonder how long I should stay."
Alibi snags a glass of champagne from a passing servant's tray as he watches a lovely olive-skinned woman twirling on the dance floor in an old-fashioned dress. Her dance partner, dressed in a business-like suit, is a sleek, dark-skinned woman with short, curly black hair.
"That dancer looks familiar. Is that Shira from high school?"
"Looks like her. Didn't know she was out here. We hooked up for a while, way back when. Wonder if she remembers." Alibi takes a sip of champagne and watches Shira dance. The governor returns and interrupts him, a young couple in tow.
"Alibi Jones," Villa says.
"Yes, Governor Villa." Villa brings the young couple forward.
"There are a few people here tonight who wanted to thank your aunt personally. As she's not able to be here, would you be so kind? Allow me to introduce you."
"Oh, no. She didn't tell me about this."
"You owe me, Ananita."
"How many people can Villa introduce me to?"
Hoping for a breather after an hour of hellos and your name agains, Alibi, feeling somewhat worn out, attempts to hide out of sight on a small outdoor deck and grab a second drink.
"Can only make so much small talk."
The governor finds him again, all the same.
"Alibi Jones."
"Getting tired of hearing him say my name."
"Come," Villa says. "You must meet our guest of honor."
A little surprised, Alibi sees the governor has brought over the short-haired dancing partner of his old girlfriend, Shira.
"Alibi Jones," Villa says. "Meet the director of Poyas." Georgia McGregory.
Hello, I'm Alibi Jones, Solar Mediation Corps. Alibi extends his hand. She looks wary. Hello. Director of Poyas, Alibi says. Never heard of it, sorry. Where's Poyas? Georgia McGregory pulls up proud as she responds. We're a growing colony on the edge of Darkur space, she says. You hadn't heard of us yet, and now you've heard of us. Georgia smiles as she settles down. The governor looks confused.
Jones, you were just on her, weren't you?
He asks.
That makes you almost an expert on the Darkur. I was sure you would have run across Poyas colony.
Alibi is about to respond when Georgia interrupts. I'm afraid you must excuse me. She looks alarmed. She turns and leaves Alibi and the governor, heading back inside the main ballroom.
Okay, the governor says, confused.
Yeah, that's kind of weird, Alibi says, now suspicious.
You know her?
Via asks. No, Alibi says. Not her. I used to know her partner there, but I don't think... Alibi's words hang in the air as Georgia reaches Shira and makes a show of gathering her up to leave.
Come, Andrea,
Georgia says, conspicuously loud, into a lull in the music and conversation.
I must attend to a colony matter.
Georgia grabs Shira by the arm, and the two make for the door. The room is awkwardly silent for a moment before the murmurs and melody resume.
Have you chased our guest of honor away, Jones?
Via asks. Alibi misses the question, lost in thought.
Andrea?
An overdressed, mustachioed older man with rosy cheeks and turned-up nose approaches the governor and Alibi, apparently agitated, ready to sputter at them.
What did you say to the director?
He demands.
Nothing, the governor says. Alibi Jones, Kevin Tremaine, the new ambassador for Poyas.
Ambassador? Alibi says. Alibi is not impressed. He'd seen this guy working the crowd earlier, obviously self-important.
As puffed up as his frilly shirt.
And no doubt newly appointed the way he's acting.
Still, suppose I should engage him. It's like I can hear my aunt in my head telling me what to do.
So, you're near Darkur space? Alibi asks. Tremaine, distracted, ignores Alibi, too busy talking to the governor to hear him.
I'm sure she'll inform me back at the estate,
Tremaine says.
She was not upset, Via says.
Tremaine finally notices Alibi Jones, as Alibi speaks again. The woman with your director, Alibi asks.
You are?
Tremaine answers his question with one of his own.
This is Alibi Jones, Via says, repeating himself. Anita Capituna's son?
Oh!
Hearing the name of the former leader of the free world, Tremaine is now more aware of Alibi. He smiles a smarmy smile.
Pleasure!
Right, Alibi says. Tremaine, uneasy, keeps glancing towards the doors where Georgia has just left. So, you're out near the Darkur? Alibi asks again.
What?
Tremaine looks at Alibi with a furrowed brow.
Darkur? Yes. Well, I've just been appointed. Haven't actually been out there yet.
Really? Alibi says. Huh. Tell me, the woman with the director. Her name's Shira.
Sure? No, what? No, that's the Lady Andrea Lavera.
Really? Alibi says. Oh.
Would you please excuse me?
Ambassador?
The governor says with a nod. Looking uncomfortable, Tremaine nods back and leaves. Alibi tries to slip out as well. I should get going too, he says. The governor places his hand on Alibi's arm, holding him in place as Tremaine walks away.
Come now, Alibi, he protests.
All my A-listers can't leave at once.
Alibi looks toward the doors with longing. He smiles a fake smile at the governor, who beams back, the happy host.
You definitely owe me for this one, Aunt Anita.
2 hours later, Alibi is finally free, He heads for the sanctuary of his own apartment. That party drag on for a week, or was it just me? Back home, Alibi will finally be able to look into what's been bothering him. At least staying till party's end helped me find out more about Shira's new deal. Entering his apartment, Alibi activates a floating info screen, a heads-up display. As he takes off his dress uniform jacket and lays it down on the couch, he calls up information. Now, let's see about Lady Andrea Lovera and the Poyas colony. His search yields a flashy presentation for settlement and investment opportunities. Scenes begin to play. A large ship, presumably a colony vessel, reaching a blue-green world. A side screen pops up with Shira's face smiling out at him. His search on Lady Andrea Lovera. Alibi glances at the blurb on the side screen. The lovely Ms. Lovera is supposed to be an original colonist? Alibi says to himself. Yeah, right. As audio begins, the main screen shows what looks like actual footage of the main city of the colony of Poyas under construction, in the midst of lush vegetation. In the foreground, happy workers raise the side of a new building.
Is it time for a new start?
The voiceover sounds familiar. Some famous old actor.
Looking for the right place to raise your kids? This is Brady Thomas for the Poyas Colony, the growing human colony on the edge of Dakur space, and maybe your new home.
A grizzled, gray-haired, former action star appears, superimposed on the colonial footage.
Thanks to a special charter from the Dakur King of Poyas, director Georgia McGregory and her staff have grown the original, tiny, experimental Poyas colony into a near paradise. No place is perfect, but the Poyas colony comes darn close. It's a little off the beaten path. The nearby nebula does limit wand communication and makes a transpace jump point a little distant. But if you're like me and don't mind getting away from the chaos of modern life, well, let's just say, it ain't bad being a week and a half away from it all.
Mute, Alibi commands. Really? The Dakur King? What kind of crap is that? The Dakur don't have kings. Man, are they laying it on thick. Guess Poyas has a proactive PR staff. The main display continues to show idyllic construction vistas. Dates and departure info appears and floats superimposed over the image on the screen. Huh. Sent off a colony ship just last week. Takes a week and a half to get there? The presentation is showing simplified star charts for the colony. Looks like the Barretzen Nebula's in the way, he says to himself. Funny. Don't know of any colonies out there. Alibi sees the old actor is on the main screen again. What's he saying now?
Mute off. 1,000 per individual, or just 750,000 Solar Alliance dollars for a family of four. You can soon be living in your new home on Poyas. Your payment covers all transportation costs, pays for your new home in the colony, and you'll get a starter seed interest-free loan of 100,000 Poyas dollars, the currency of the colony. And you'll probably want to exchange your SA dollars for Poyas dollars before leaving for the colony. The Poyas colony is also open to investment opportunities.
Off! Alibi barks. The main screen blinks off, but the image of Shira still hangs nearby on the second, smaller screen. Investment opportunities? Yeah, I bet you are. This doesn't feel right. Star charts for the Barretzen Nebula and surroundings, please. The main screen shifts to a 3D display of the Barretzen Nebula stellar neighborhood. Alibi studies it with growing alarm. No way! He shakes his head. They wouldn't, would they? He zooms in to the supposed location of their paradise. Only thing out there is a dead Eldred world. Atmosphere poisoned with deadly toxins. Makeup unknown? Is that their Poyas? Alibi looks over at the side screen. What have you gotten yourself into, Shira?
Even during the colony's daylight hours, some nearby stars are bright enough to be seen in Cat's Eye's pale indigo sky alongside its namesake nebula. Alibi Jones finds himself looking up at them absentmindedly the next morning as he waits in an entry alcove at the main entrance of a luxurious manse, the residence for the sprawling Tremaine estate, located at the eastern edge of Cat's Eye's main city. He's before an impressive-looking wood and iron front door. He'd hit a door buzzer on the side, in the wall of the alcove, a few minutes ago. A woman on the screen next to the buzzer then asked him to wait a moment. It's been a long moment. The woman reappears on the screen. Welcome to the Tremaine Estate. Hi, this is Alibi Joe. He's cut off as she continues. The home of Ambassador Kevin Tremaine and residence on Cat's Eye. Alibi rolls his eyes. He doesn't care if she can see him. Of Poyas Colony Director Georgia McGregory and the Lady Andrea Lovera. Whom may I say is calling? This is Alibi Jones. I'd like to see the Lady Andrea Lovera. One moment. After another long moment, this one about 10 minutes length, the big door partially opens. Shira peers out from the dim foyer beyond the door. Alibi can almost feel Georgia lurking there in the darkness behind her. Alibi? Shira says. Alibi Jones? You shouldn't have come here. Shira? Alibi asks. Or is it Lady Lovera? Georgia is there. She flings the door open and emerges with a gun in her hand pointed at Alibi. Shira cowers as she moves aside. Yes, Alibi, Georgia says. You really shouldn't have come nosing around. A little surprised, Alibi backs up warily and mentally prepares to defend himself. He raises his hands in at least a temporary surrender. Now that you have, she says, I must insist you come in. Georgia signals with her gun for Alibi to join them inside the manse. The women lead Alibi to an old-fashioned library in the estate. Georgia nods at an antique chair next to a roll-up desk. Sit down, she says. Shira, go get the duct tape. Alibi sits. Shira returns and starts wrapping Alibi and the chair with duct tape. Georgia keeps the gun trained on him. He stares at her until she frowns and starts talking. I knew you were trouble when I met you last night, she says. When she... the Lady Andrea told me you were an old boyfriend, well... The jealous type, huh? Alibi sasses back. She's the only reason you're not dead already. Guess if you'd sentence a shipload of innocent colonists to death, you wouldn't hesitate to kill little old me, huh? Alibi says. Georgia scowls at him, angry. But Shira, next to her, seems alarmed and confused. What? Shira says. Tremaine shatters the moment, opening the library door and innocently interrupting. Director Georgia, Tremaine says, strolling into the room. Great news! Just heard from the colony ship over the relay. They're about a day out from Tremaine stops, alarmed at the sight of Georgia holding a gun on Alibi. Tremaine, you old fool, Georgia says, angry. Go pretend to be important somewhere else. The man looks truly confused. Director? Tremaine asks. Oh dear, what's going on? George's eyes bulge a little, fed up with the older man.
Enough!
She shoots him.
Fwash!
The beam from her gun blasts Tremaine, doubling him over as if punched in the abdomen as he flies backwards from the impact.
I won't let it all fall apart now, Georgia says, sounding slightly frantic and angry. Shira, get Aaron. Bring the transport around front.
Georgia holds her gun on Alibi as Shira leaves the room. What the hell are you doing? Alibi asks.
Tying up loose ends, she says.
She trails off. Georgia takes a box cutter out of a pocket and extends the blade, glaring at Alibi. Box cutter in her left hand, gun in her right, she walks over to Alibi, duct taped to his chair. She walks around behind the chair, out of his line of sight.
Turning disadvantages into advantages, she says.
He sees the flash of the box cutter's blade. She brings it down just behind his left shoulder blade.
and starts cutting through the duct tape, slicing down on the side of Alibi's chair, all the while holding the gun at ready in her other hand.
"We'll put you and the old man on your cruiser and fly you into a star somewhere," she says. "Two loose ends tied off."
Alibi feels the duct tape loosen as Georgia cuts below his left hand. He tests it, bringing his now free arm's elbow up into Georgia's chin.
"Ugh!"
she grunts. Alibi looks down at a stunned Georgia as he gets up. Still half stuck, he tries shaking the duct tape chair off of him. His back to the door, he doesn't see a big man in a mechanic's jumpsuit come into the library with a gun in his hand.
"You're crazy," Alibi says.
She shouts past him.
"Aaron!"
Aaron brings the butt end of his gun down on the back of Alibi's head, knocking him out with a thunk. Alibi emerges from unconsciousness, and though he can't yet see, the world again takes form around him. He feels and hears a low vibration, the hum of his cruiser's engines. The cold hardness his left cheek rests against must be the deck of his ship.
"Am I on the bridge?"
"Oh," Alibi groans.
"It hurts to think too much.
Will it hurt to open my eyes?" He tries. Not too bad. A little too bright. He is on the deck of his ship's bridge. A woman in a helmetless EVA suit sits in the pilot's chair. He can't see her face from here.
"Who's flying my ship?" Alibi asks in a weak voice.
The pilot gets up. Alibi can't yet move for some reason. Her boots grow in his sight as she walks across the deck to him. Then, Shira's face looms large as she leans down to look at him.
"Shira is flying my ship."
"Alibi?" she asks. "You awake? What are you?"
he tries to ask. It's hard to form the words.
"Where are we going?"
"Georgia's decided," Shira says. "Despite my protests, you've got to die, Alibi."
"Great."
"I've set the controls for the heart of the sun," she says. She walks back over to the pilot's chair, sits down, and fires the cruiser's directional thrusters to bring the already much too large sun into view in front of them, so Alibi can watch it grow larger. The cruiser flies on closer toward the sun, with Shira at the controls. Beginning to shake off the initial fog of his concussion, Alibi tries to get up and realizes his hands are bound together with duct tape, ankles too. He still somehow manages to inchworm across the deck to the wall of the bridge behind the pilot's chair and props himself up so he can hold an actual conversation with Shira.
"Been a while, huh, Shira?" Alibi says.
"Yup," she answers, but continues to watch the controls in front of her.
"How'd you get mixed up in this thing?"
Shira sighs.
"I got mixed up with her," she says. "She promised this would be the last game."
"Game?" Alibi says, growing angry.
"You have a shipload of people who think they're heading to paradise about to land on a dead Eldred world with nothing to breathe but poison. You think that's a game? What's happened to you?"
"Shut up," she snaps.
"I didn't know that. About the planet they're going to, I mean. She said it was fine, just not as nice a place as we'd promised."
Shira can sometimes be a little delusional, Alibi remembers. Convince herself of anything she needs to be happy. He wonders if he can get through to her. "The Eldred booby-trapped all their worlds when their race died out, Shira," he says. "That ship lands on that planet? Those people are all going to die."
I know, she says. "Now?"
"Good, she's listening."
"Georgia didn't tell you that, huh?"
Shira laughs.
"Georgia?" she says. "Ha! Her name's not Georgia, it's Sanders. And no, she didn't tell me that. It's always been money games before. No one really got hurt, just their wallets."
Shira turns back to look at Alibi. The sun looms behind her.
"I'm not a murderer, Alibi," Shira insists. "Like she said, that's why you're still alive."
"Well," Alibi says, "except that you're flying me into the sun. Oh, hey, where's Tremaine?
Shira stands up from the controls with her EVA suit's helmet in her hand and looks down at Alibi.
I helped him off the ship a ways back, before you woke up, she says. And I'll help you now, if you'll let me.
What, off the ship?
She smirks. She leans over and cuts off the tape binding his hands.
Don't be an idiot, Allie, she says. You've got 5 minutes before you'll hit the sun. I've got to get off now, before we're too close, and this suit's shielding won't protect me.
Alibi starts to rip the tape off his ankles as Shira turns to leave the bridge.
You're getting off the ship? He asks. The controls are locked for the next 2 minutes, she says. That gives me enough time to get off. And gives you enough time to get away, after they unlock, and before Georgia comes to get me.
She disappears. Alibi stands up, using the wall to support his unsteady legs, stiff and sore from lack of use. Once up, he half walks over to, half falls into the pilot's chair. He calls up security cams to see where Shira went. Alibi spots her, wearing her helmet, in the ship's front starboard airlock. He opens the comlink.
You're sure she'll pick you up? He asks.
I trust her, she says. The airlock open indicator for the front starboard airlock lights up. Shira floats out in her EVA suit.
I still love her, she says, over the comm. She'll empty the Poyas accounts and then come get me.
Alibi feels himself slowly regaining clarity. He squints at the ship's controls, trying to get his mental focus back. They are locked.
Damn her.
Shira floats into view outside of the cockpit of Alibi's cruiser, looking in on him.
You can sure pick 'em, Shira, Alibi says. She laughs over the comm.
Funny, that's what she said about you. Alibi watches the counter tick down. 30 seconds, and he could go. Unless...
Wait a sec.
But she knows I could... How do you know I won't just sit here, blasters ready and waiting, and take out her ship when she arrives? Alibi says.
Because I know you, Alibi, Shira says. And I'm trusting you to make things right. Watching her floating out there, he could see the question in her eyes through the thick, clear plate of the ship's viewport and her helmet. What she was asking him to do. The nebula's interference won't let you contact the colony ship from here, she says.
But if you jump to the transpace point nearest the nebula right now, you'll be able to reach them over the relay and warn them not to land. The coordinates are preset in front of you there.
Pushing off the outside hull of the ship, Shira starts floating away.
Should be unlocked now, she says. You'd better get going.
On the bridge, Alibi shakes his head at Shira's presumption and warms up the transpace drive.
Damn, he says over the comm. You're going to get caught, Shira. Always were too smart for your own good.
Lucky for you, she says.
Now go!
Alibi maneuvers the ship away from Shira as he readies the jump to transpace.
I'm going to do this and then come back for you, Shira, he says.
No, you won't, she says. I'll be long gone. Floating alone, Shira watches as the cruiser disappears into transpace.
See you later, Alibi Jones.
The end. For now. That was Alibi Jones' Blind Eye on Glow in the Dark Radio. Well, that's Alibi Jones' story, but it's really a story out of history. Georgia McGregory and her colony con game of Poyas is based on an actual historical con run by a Scotsman in the 1820s, Gregor McGregor. So Georgia McGregory is essentially Gregor. But in the future, and, you know, with her gender switch, so. This came about because I submitted an Alibi Jones script to Earthbound Comics for Spacebound.
which Ben and Matt there liked but felt was too far into Alibi's career. The story Vacation eventually did see the light of day, but it was set after the novel, so I understood what those guys meant when they asked for something more introductory. But I needed to write a story fairly quickly. And ideas weren't, you know, immediately coming, so I started doing some brainstorming and looking at, you know, different things in history. Historical Cons, I think, was what led me this way, and I stumbled across the story of Gregor MacGregor and Poyais, sometimes written with an I, P-O-Y-A-I-S. I just wrote it with the shorter version, P-O-Y-A-S. And there wasn't a lot on him, but there was plenty enough to base my story's plot on. Wikipedia had a pretty good article. I think the Encyclopedia Britannica had a pretty good entry as well, if I'm remembering right. But these days, it's hard to tell. It's kind of been changed. It's hard to know now. Because in early 2016, the BBC did a big piece on him and his con. So that's out there. The con man who pulled off history's most audacious scam. So all of a sudden, he was like much better known. And since then, their piece kind of informs much of the coverage. And there have been more articles and videos done in its wake. And what's funny is I only just discovered this. I was looking, you know, to tell you about Gregor MacGregor and if you could look him up. And I was like, oh, well, there's a lot more out there. Looks like a good article. Some interesting YouTube videos to watch. Yeah, maybe. So there is more out there if you want to know the historical basis for this futuristical science fiction short story, Blind Eye. But yeah, based on a true story, Gregor MacGregor, if you want to look up the historical basis for Blind Eye. So next week we go underwater. And this is a story that takes place within the second novel. Like, actually within the novel. But you still don't need to know anything in advance. It's still, you know, a standalone short story. Alibi Jones in over his head. A reminder of my publishing news, non-science fiction, this week. 4 brand new calendars just out. Views of Vermont. Ancient Vermont Mysteries. Ancient Stone Mysteries of New England with stone chambers and stone rows, stone walls. And Exploring Ancient America. All these DIY, soup to nuts, as they say. Took the photos, did the resizing, design work, assembly and production, all that. And I'm getting it done print on demand through lulu.com. So if you want to see the pictures, just head to glowinthedarkradio.com/calendars. And there's a link to each of the 4. And when you go to those, you get the picture galleries and pretty much everything there. Links to the lulu.com site where you can order them. And if you can, please support this podcast through Patreon. Go to patreon.com/glowinthedarkradio or go to glowinthedarkradio.com and click on the Patreon link. And for $2, $5, or $10 a month, you can support this podcast and get all the little extras that I send patrons away. Including, I'm going to try to do it here, I'm working on it, the first draft podcast of the next Alibi Jones novel. The Mortimek Wars. I like that working title. It may stick. It's been sticking so far. And that's all for this week. I'm your host, your writer and reader, Mike Luoma. Thank you again for listening to Glow in the Dark Radio. Glow in the Dark Radio. Radio.
This podcast presentation is copyright 2021 by Michael F. Luoma and is protected under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives 4.0 International License. CC by NCND 4.0. Music by Kevin MacLeod. You can find his work at Accompetech.com and filmmusic.io. Mike's books are available in ebook, paperback, and audiobook wherever you find books online. Get links and more details at glowinthedarkradio.com and mikeluoma.com. This has been a presentation of Glow in the Dark Radio.